But I think what's very, very exciting about the Wash and Soul project is that we do touch on kind of the full circle of wash. So we have water management, we have waste management, solid and liquid. We have, you know, sensitization kind of campaigns in there as well. But then we've also are bringing in this side of social business and entrepreneurship, which is bringing in the service. So we're building the community to be able to have access and provide services all in one, which is very exciting. Water is life, a human right. He cannot do without it. You and I, it's our responsibility. Create a better world. Be Water, der Podcast von Viva Con Agua.
Wir nehmen dich mit in unseren bunten Kosmos rund um Wasserprojekte, soziales Engagement, Kunst und Kultur, Sport und Social Business. Zweimal im Monat sprechen wir über Themen, die Viva Con Agua beschäftigen, formen und verändern. Einmal mit Gast und einmal ohne.
Wir, das sind Sophia Burgert, energiegeladene Aktivistin mit hohem Bewegungsdrang, und Norbert Latim, leidenschaftlicher Gamer und Gründer von Viva Con Agua Uganda.
Well, welcome to the Be Water podcast. Today's episode is recorded in English because we have two guests that don't speak German. And we're very happy to invite Amanda and Patrick to today's episode. Last time, Nobi and I talked about wash projects in general, the way Viva Con Agua implements wash projects, what wash actually means, that stands for water, sanitation and hygiene. And today we're very happy to welcome two guests, Amanda and Patrick, to the podcast. Here's a little spoiler. It's Monday morning. It's not even 9 a.m. in the morning. That's why you're here. I'm a bit still tired. So if my English is not that good the whole time, please excuse that. So, I'm going to introduce our two guests briefly and give them the opportunity to also say something about themselves. First of all, we got Amanda, who was born in Lusaka, that is in Zambia, and she's there at the moment as well. Welcome, Amanda. I hope we can hear you. And she's working as a project manager for Borda, and Borda is an expert NGO that focuses on sanitation and urban development. And she's here together with Patrick, who works for Soul Bottles. I think we explained that briefly in the last episode too, what Soul Bottles is. It's basically a social business that sells drinking bottles made of glass, and they work together with different NGOs and make very great project and things. There has been a partnership with Viva Con Agua for a very long time. I think last year there was a small celebration because the 1 millionth Soul bottle was sold. We're very happy to welcome you today. I think Patrick is also not in Germany at the moment. You're in Accra, right?
Yes, right. Hello, good morning. Nice. Accra, Ghana right now.
All right. So before we deep dive into the today's topic, which is the Wash and Soul project together with Viva Con Agua Borda and Soul Bottles, I have two questions for Patrick and Amanda. So we always start that the podcast episode with that question. Patrick, if your life was a song, what would be the first line?
Oh, if my life would be a song. Oh, that. So bad in song lyrics, I have to say. I think Amanda has to go first, and I have one more second to think about it. So.
All right.
I like it.
I'm also a bit lost. The first thing that, can it just be like one line and like a really cool beat? Because mine would be like something about like, or like one word, maybe something with sunshine in it. I don't know. That's what came to my mind right now.
That's good. It's the first nice line.
Yeah, I guess I'm going in the same direction. I'm a passionate dancer. I love big festivals and small festivals. So maybe just this you know, this moment on the dance floor with together with your friends and really expressing yourself there, going out there.
Nice. Very good. Maybe we'll pose the question at the end of the episode again. Let's see. Okay. So as I said, we shortly introduced the two of you. I said already how the whole, like, how Viva Con Agua has this partnership with Soul Bottles already for a long time. But we did not really say what Border does or how the touch point between Viva Con Agua and Border was. So Amanda, maybe you can explain to our listeners, what was your first touch point with Viva Con Agua and what does Border?
So, well, the first touch point with Border, I suppose, was when we responded to the call for concepts for the Wash and Soul project, with a concept note, and they liked it. So that's how we've come to be a team, the three organizations. And we will be implementing the Wash and Soul project here in Lusaka. As you've said, Sophia, Border is working in the space of sanitation, and here in Zambia it's the same. For Border Zambia, we do a lot of work around decentralized sanitation systems. Also some started to do some work around solid waste management, which we'll dive a little deeper into through the implementation of the Wash and Soul project. We're here in Zambia. Border Zambia is one of the network partners in like the wash sector here, working in sanitation and a little water supply.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. So I think we can now dig a little bit deeper into the project. You said you were born in Lusaka and you live there right now, Amanda, right?
Yes.
So maybe you can explain a little bit or talk about what is the life in Lusaka? What does your daily life look like? That I think could be really interesting.
My daily life? Lusaka is a great... It's a big town, really, and it's grown quite a lot in the last, I would say, 10 years. So it is growing fast, and there's been a lot of new developments. So it is getting bigger, but it's still a big town to me, because I suppose I've lived here all of my life. And it's still quite a green city, although that's in certain parts. There is different areas in the city. Of course, through the Wash and Soul project, we will work in the low income areas, which are maybe not so green, quite densely populated. How to describe my city to you? It's a great city. Mm-hmm. a fun water fact about the city is we have a lot of groundwater. We're on top of a lot of groundwater, a lot of aquifers, which actually gives us as a city a lot of our water supply. We do get some of it from the Kafue River, but we do have this very large supply of groundwater, which we need. There's a lot of push now in the city with a lot of different organizations to protect that, because we are blowing up as a city. There's a lot of kind of developments in terms of decentralized sanitation systems, both maybe septic tanks or pit latrines. And the problem with pit latrines is if you don't line them, you run the risk of infecting the groundwater. So there's a lot of push to try and protect it so we don't become water scarce or have outbreaks, because we still are having cholera outbreaks. I think our last big one was in late 2018. Yeah, so that was a fun water fact about Lusaka.
Interesting.
I find that very interesting that you mentioned there's a lot of greenery, there's underground water, and let's say rivers and water bodies. I don't know, could you please explain a bit more
then what the relevance or why there's so much demand for these water projects or wash projects in Zambia, considering this greenery and water and all this?
Well, like I said, the green city is not all over the city. Mm-hmm. We do have instances where there's large areas that we call them peri-urban areas, that are low income areas, which are not green. So they've been for a long time informal settlements, but now there's been a big push to recognize them, which is a very good step forward, because through recognition of the area and the population that lives in the area, it means they have a right to services. Whereas before, when they were still informal and not recognized, they were nobody's problem, essentially. So now that they've been recognized as like areas of the city where there are people living actually quite a lot, 70% of our city's population lives in a low-income area. So now, over, I would say, the last 5 or 6 years, there's been a big push to get services to the people living in low-income areas. So water, like water and sanitation services, of course, also improved sanitation. So building of latrines that are, one, like dignified and safe and healthy for the person using it, but also safe for the environment and the groundwater. And also, although we are sitting on like a lot of groundwater and we have our big rivers, it doesn't always mean that there's access. So that's the biggest thing. It's that, and I think this is the case whenever you have inequality, or people are like, well, it is there. You do have a river and you do have groundwater. It does not necessarily mean access. Especially if you've got a population that's living below the poverty line, if they want to get the groundwater, then they usually would dig a shallow well, which is super unsafe if you've got an unlined pit latrine right next to it, right? So there's all of these kinds of things. And so I think that's what the importance of all of the wash projects happening in Lusaka are, is one, giving people access to safe, dignified services, while also protecting our rivers and the groundwater. Yes. Yeah.
70% of the population in these peri-urban areas live below the poverty line, I think. And there's a lot, this reflects a lot of inequality in these areas. I think another form of promoting equality is also giving people a chance to be involved and make decisions. And I think it's a good point to ask Patrick why it's important to involve locals in this decision-making process, or even just the implementation of projects?
Yeah, I think on a more general level, to create a sense of self-determination and ownership about your own choices, might it be in a project like this or any kind of way of life, actually, is super essential. People, the way to create their own life and destiny, and also make them that much more, part of the whole project, or make it their own, actually, or make them the main actors of a project like this, and not be in this situation for Viva Con Agua Soul Bottles or Border to be, people from somewhere else that come somewhere, try to explain or bring a thing, but rather have people in their own community create something for themselves.
Yeah, I think that's an important topic that we actually talked about also in the first episode in this month about WASH, that it's so important to give the communities the opportunity to actually become involved into the project, to feel responsible, to have like the ownership of their own needs to be able to communicate what actually is the problem in their area. So I think it's really important. But now we actually before we zoom into the details of the projects, maybe Patrick, you could give a little bit the background story of the Wash and Soul project. How did it start and why was there a decision to make a project from Viva Con Agua, Soul Bottles and Border?
Sure. So Soul Bottles is a social enterprise from Berlin. As you already mentioned in the introduction, we mainly try to make people excited and more about a more sustainable lifestyle while mainly selling drinking bottles, refillable ones. And since the start of our business endeavor, we said 1 euro of each bottle sold is going to try to bring drinking water, clean drinking water to all people on the planet, made that part of our mission, and are proudly working together with this, with Viva Con Agua since the start. So we were able to fund together a drinking water project in the Chitwan region of Nepal. I think you also have been in Nepal, right?
Yeah, I was there. I was there with one of your colleagues also.
Ah, yeah, cool.
Like 3 years ago, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, so that was a wonderful experience for us to fund this project together with Viva Con Agua and the Welt Hungerhilfe, and to being able to reach nearly 90,000 people with the wash approach, so with water, hygiene and sanitation. And just after years of working together, Viva Con Agua and Soul Bottles came together and said, hey, let's try to bring our partnership to the next level, all in the spirit of the network approach of Viva Con Agua, to involve different stakeholders in many different ways, to take upon their different capacities and skills. And so we decided to, for the first time, I think for both organizations, to try to really design and create a drinking water project and to bring our own strengths into it even more, and our learnings out of the past. So on the side of what did we consider our strengths and skills, on the side of Soul Bottles, we wanted to bring more awareness for the topics of plastic reduction, waste management into the project, focus on a semi-urban area as well, and try to also bring our vision of social entrepreneurship and entrepreneurship that helps to make the planet a better place, and to preserve its natural resources. And we also tried to bring in a perspective of trying to make the project CO2 neutral, or even help to compensate CO2 emissions. And obviously, working with Viva Con Agua, we try to have a great great part of art, culture, and the universal languages approach in the project. And after some really amazing work meetings on this in the Viva Con Agua headquarters in St. Pauli, and also with us in Soul Bottles in Berlin, our working group had to then finish the work in the more video call Corona time setting that you guys all know right by now, and managed to bring out this this proposal for the project, and Border then came into the fold after handing in a great proposal and convincing us that they would be the right local implementation partner on the ground with an amazing team around and the right experience in Lusaka. Yeah.
So you've mentioned two very interesting points in there. One, the components of the project, which are waste management, social entrepreneurship, and CO2 management, and also ULA, the Universal Languages Approach. I think all these are topics that we could even have independent podcasts on, but I would like to single out maybe one thing for now, which would be the social entrepreneurship. Amanda, what does that mean to you? Or could you please tell us some more about the social business aspect?
I feel like this is totally Patrick's territory, but I'll have a go at it.
That was a bit mean.
this particular component of the project is quite exciting. Because I think when we talk about, bringing the communities that we will work with, like in as actors rather than, if I use the word beneficiary, which we will be avoiding, in the Wash and Sew project, mm-hmm. Then this is a really cool component for that, because it really is kind of really involving the community at providing services for their own community, I think, which is really exciting. I've been part of some entrepreneur social business initiatives in WASH before, particularly focused on female entrepreneurs, which is also what we will try to focus on in the WASH and Soul project. But yes, I think there's so many exciting things to be done around business in WASH. And then when you kind of bring it into a context of each individual community, I really think that there's no one who can provide a better service of WASH than the community members themselves. So it is a very exciting part of the project. And also, I think it's very important in that it kind of brings this very holistic kind of closes the circle. I think, like you said, Noba, there's a lot of different components of the Wash and Soul project that we could have a podcast for each of them, right? Yeah. But I think what's very, very exciting about the Wash and Soul project is that we do touch on kind of the full circle of WASH. So we have water management, we have waste management, solid and liquid. We have, you know, social behavior change, like sensitization, kind of campaigns in there as well. But then we've also are bringing in this side of social business and entrepreneurship, which is bringing in the service. So again, we're building the community to be able to have access and provide mm-hmm. services all in one, which is very exciting.
Thanks. So what I was wondering now, if we imagine now I'm a young female student and I'm living in Lusaka, and well, mm-hmm. I'm seeing in my community, I don't know, there's lack of access to sanitation or clean drinking water, and I'm really bothered by that fact. What chances do I actually have to come in touch with the project, with Border, if I want to change something? Maybe if, I don't know if you have the answer to that, but I was just wondering if you could point out what would happen in that situation if really there's one person in the local community who sees, okay, there is a need, what would he or she do in the best case or in the project?
I think we've highlighted our approach that we want to very much be facilitating the community to be very much part of everything that happens in the project. So I think with every component and with every process, there's always the first step of engaging with the community that we will be working with, and asking questions like, what, if I put it like in the most plain way, like, what do you want and what do you see your biggest problems to be? And this would be the same with kind of the entrepreneur and social business component is we will very much be doing like collecting data of what businesses already exist, because there are a lot of businesses that are already existing in the communities that we will work in. So it will be one asking, you know, what businesses are existing, and then reaching out to those businesses and seeing also what it is that they feel they need to like go the next step and the next step. So I think if if there is, I don't know, a woman or a man in the community who really feels like this is a problem that I see in my community, and this is an idea or something that I've been running that is aiming to solve that problem for my community, then we will engage with that community member and see, you know, how best we can, as a project, facilitate them and work with them to kind of achieve those goals.
Yeah, it takes me back to what Patrick said. The whole point of including locals and involving them is so that there is a sense of self-determination and ownership. And I think connecting that to social businesses and then also connecting that to the youth, this is a good way to make them have this feeling of ownership of their communities at a young age, but also connect this ownership with a tangible, can I call it, process or thing, like a business that they can put their feeling of ownership into action. And I think this is also then, I hope now I am addressing the right person with this question. Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Yeah, I think just why also entrepreneurial education or this idea of empowering people to think about things in an entrepreneurial way doesn't necessarily have to lead to running a business itself. Yeah? It's just like skills that really help to empower you to finish projects or to bring something into a reality that you otherwise might not have maybe achieved. And I think this is so such a good opportunity for a project like ours to bring in the skills, especially considering how young the population in the country is and how much value it can generate in the long term to deliver the skills, not only particular on this one project or the ideas that we have here, but what can it do for the rest of a person's life and the people around them or the community around them.
Mm-hmm. What I thought or what I think is really interesting that the project also aims at youngsters, at young kids, at schools in general. I think that about 20,000 kids that are trying to be reached at 20 schools. And I don't know if you guys know that I was actually also working a lot with schools here in Germany, or still am. If Corona permits it, I'll go to schools again. So this is always like really important part, I think, for Vivo con Agua to actually sensibilize younger generations for WASH. Why is it important to actually have access to clean drinking water? What does my, like, if I consume every day a lot of meat, or if I buy jeans every day, like new pair of jeans, new pair of clothes, how does it affect the global climate, the water, the global water situation? So I was wondering if it is also planned that there are workshops with the kids at the schools, or what exactly is planned at the schools in the project area? Sorry, I didn't name, I don't know, either one of you who likes to answer that question.
I can go. And then Patrick, if I missed anything or you want to add anything, please. But I think we will be, one, based on each individual school, we'll obviously be designing like the concept for each individual school. So based on what's needed and what's feasible is what we'll implement in terms of infrastructure, right? For example, with like sanitation solutions, it will only be if there's space for a DWATS, for example. But I think we will also, I think, and this will be blanketed across all schools, there will be looking to see if there's already a WASH club at the school, and if there is not, kind of supporting the school to start that up again. And so I think through those WASH clubs, but also just through the activities that we'll be implementing together with the school, I think we will be working with the children at the school to kind of, you know, raise awareness about actually what what adequate and dignified wash really is, because I think sometimes that's the first step, is actually just kind of shedding a light on what actually your right is. Because I think sometimes we think that, oh, but people know what their right is, but sometimes actually they don't. So I think through these wash clubs, we will be supporting to educate children that to know that they have a right to adequate and safe and dignified water supply and sanitation. And then hopefully they will also act as kind of these, I don't know, multipliers in the community, because they're going to go home and they're going to speak about that. And so, yeah, this is, I think, the starting point of how we'll be doing it at the school level.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I experienced that also in Nepal, in the Chitwan region, where we went to a lot of schools and where you could see that actually kids, that whatever they learn, they'll function as like multipliers, because they go back home, they go to their villages, they talk to their parents, hey, mom, today I learned like what, I don't know, how long I need to use the soap until every bacteria is gone and stuff like that. So yeah, I think it's really important actually to start with like the younger generation, and yeah, as you said, give them, empower them to know what their right are, and that it's actually, yeah, a human right to have access to clean drinking water and to safe sanitation.
Yeah, I mean, I think Amanda explained it quite well. I think what might be a little bit different to the other great projects Viva Con Agua is supporting, that is that we, in this one, really try to bring in or think in every component of the project back to our four main topics. So first and foremost is always water management, wash, what we already talked about. This obviously should also be reflected in the schools. Then the second one we wanted to focus on is waste management. And so we really want to try as well in the schools to just make a first step in, you know, creating to sensibilize for the topic of separating of waste and such things. And then the two other parts are always, you know, climate protection. So that goes somehow a little bit in the same and direction, I guess, in the school context, and entrepreneurial education, or, you know, first little steps in this direction. We already talked about maybe in the schools, this is the smallest part.
Something small that just crosses my mind is, I know it from Uganda, or at least it's something I ask myself always in the back of my mind, that how easy is it to talk about things like separation of rubbish or CO2 to communities or to kids or even the older people. How easy it is to bring about this message, because sometimes I feel it's something that's not easy to explain in such communities compared to here, especially when, I mean, they've got other things going on in their lives. You talk about cholera and all that, but then you also want to bring that communication of, for example, CO2. Mm-hmm. Is that something you also talk about?
Yeah, I mean, thank you for raising this point, especially coming from Central Europe. It's very, it's super important for us to not, like, just try to impose our view or what is most important to us to some other region or community in the world. Obviously if something like waste management sounds super technical, it might not be first of mind for somebody living in a community there. But then on the other side, these things sound very technical when we speak about it here, or you look into a project design plan, but at the end of the day, I think people everywhere have a very high sense of the problems that arise if you burn a lot of plastics in the streets, in the backyards, in the area around you, that it does not improve life quality for the communities. And also speaking about climate protection, again, sounds technical, but, you know, to preserve the planet, to create a common enjoyment and cherishment of the planet and of resources, I think is always possible. It's also something that people, just like with the universal language approach, can really emphasize with each other and connect to each other about this idea of protecting or saving the world we live in. And actually, yeah, this is the magic as well of the universal language approach that Viva Kanakwa introduced, that you find ways to talk or to interact about these topics in a way that really everybody understands, and even more important, everybody can also create and speak in, so to say.
Thank you very much. I mean, yeah, in the end, what I can also take from your response is that we should not shy away from the hard topics, or just because it's hard to communicate culturally or even just conceptually, it doesn't mean you let it go. It means you find a way to do it, which in this case, ULA is a good example.
But before we come to our last official part, which always ends our episodes, which is a small game, not really game, but it's like a quick question answer game. I have the question to Amanda, because she mentioned it at the beginning that the project also aims at empowering or supporting young females in Lusaka. Could you explain the way this is trying to be achieved? I think this is really interesting also in the way, or in this, in the perspective that in next months, this podcast will focus or will evolve around the big topic of female empowerment, because on the 28th of May, there's the International Female Menstrual Hygiene Day, where Viva Kanakwa will, do a little stream and try to put emphasis on the topic, which is still very stigmatized, not only in Germany, but also in different countries. So could you maybe explain in what way the project tries to support females or empower them?
Sure. Well, I think with in terms of access to wash that is relevant for female needs, we will be really looking into how we can provide access at the school for managing menstrual health, and it's particularly menstrual waste, which is very often something that is not there. In fact, very, very rarely is there, which can cause kind of a little bit of apprehension on the side of the girl child to want to come to school, because either she doesn't know where she will throw her waste away when she's there, or maybe she doesn't even have anything, so she has to stay at home, right? And that's not to say that this is the only reason why girls stay at home. And actually, there are a lot of boys who don't come to school because they need to maybe do piecework that day or something like this. But this is one way that we will try to empower girls to keep coming to school. I could go so deep into that topic, but I won't, because it's so much. There's so many more layers. But anyway, I think just in general, having proper wash encourages all students to come to school, and I think they have a right to be in a learning environment where they have a decent toilet and running clean water. But on the side of kind of reaching out to female entrepreneurs or just females in the community who is empowering, because I think, you know, I think across the board, from this very community level to, for example, in the water utilities here or the city council, there's not enough female representation. And this, I think, needs to change, because women need to be part of these conversations. And they're very often not. So I think through the project, we will try to kind of support women to feel that they remember that their voice is there, and also for it to be heard. Because women anyway in the community are, due to the role given to them, with them being female, are very often in charge of water management and waste management. So this is trying to kind of, you know, support them in that, but also just, as well as being in charge of managing it, also have a say in how it's planned, how it's implemented, like what's important for them in this. So just really making sure that women and men's voices are equally heard at the table. But of course, we will be really trying to bring women up through the Wash and Soul project.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, that again, I also experienced in Nepal, where I also explained that in the other episode, where it's not everywhere, but I've seen villages or communities where it's the task of young women or ladies to spend a lot of time during the day to get to the next water spot where they actually collect the water. So many young female don't go to school. They're missing a lot of education. Plus, I also know that the whole menstruation topic is very, very stigmatized in some parts of Nepal where, females who menstruate are being excluded from the communities. They go into huts to menstruate and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think it's a very important and integral part when you think about WASH projects, that it's always like a different, people who menstruate actually have also on some days, they even have a bigger need of like access to clean water and sanitary products. All right, so I will, for the end of this episode, I'll explain the short game that I mentioned a few minutes ago. It's called Water Cannon. It goes like this. We have 10 quick questions. There are or questions, so like, for example, banana or apple, or I don't know, stuff like that. Very easy questions. And we'll ask them, and the two of you just shoot like from a water cannon the answer. Without thinking too much about the answer. Nubi, you want to start?
Yes, I will start. We will also say your names before. So if it's a question directed at Patrick, we will say Patrick. Or if it's for both of you, we will not mention any names. So I will start. Patrick, jollof rice or potatoes?
Potatoes.
Amanda, Nshima or Nsiwa?
Nshima.
Okay. I think I'm going to break the rule, unfortunately, but I just have to explain this so that the listeners can know what's happening. Jollof rice is a delicacy in Ghana, a rice delicacy. Maybe would you like to explain just a little bit?
Yeah, it's a quite fascinating dish. I think nobody's really sure where the name is coming from, jollof rice. I guess it's originating from Senegal, but I think every Western African nation or region has its own version of jollof, reaching from a more paella-style seafood dish to a very peppery, spicy in Nigeria. And that was not a fair one because, you know, coming from Northern Germany, really into the whole potato game. But jollof definitely can have my daily doses in that as well.
Yeah. And Amanda, would you like to explain to us Nshima and Nsiwa?
Nshima and Nsiwa?
Yeah.
So Nshima is very much what is eaten at every, like, usually sometimes it's eaten at breakfast as well, but usually lunch or dinner. And it's ground maize, that's then cooked, like boiled with water until it's kind of quite stiff. And you eat that with like a whole load of different relishes. It could be like veggie relishes or like sometimes kapinta, which is a small fish, or meat. There are so many different kinds of delicious relishes, but Nsiwa is, which Norbert mentioned, is a, they usually come out in rainy season. They, usually after it rains, they, I think they come up out of the ground and they're little wormies, I don't know why I'm showing you guys on the camera. Listening, can hear. I don't know. They're about the size of like the tip of your finger. And they're collected and they're fried and they're eaten, with Nshima or as a snack.
Yeah.
Well, even though I'm hungry for breakfast, I don't know if I would like to eat that.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that's, I will not ask any more backstory questions. I just thought it would be nice for the viewers or listeners to know exactly what was going on there. Another fun fact, you said Nswa and I was saying Nswa because in Uganda we call them Nswa without the I, which mm-hmm. kind of brings back this Bantu connection. I find that really interesting.
Yeah.
Nshima in Uganda is called Posho. In Kenya, it's called ugali, and I think in West mm-hmm. Africa, it's called fufu, but it's all the same thing. Mm-hmm. So that's also very interesting. Okay, so then the next question is a water ATM or a money ATM for both of you?
Water ATM.
I feel like you have to answer water ATM on this podcast. Water ATM.
Okay. Amanda, running or walking?
Walking.
Okay. Patrick, techno or hip hop?
Techno.
Amanda, countryside or city?
Ah, that's so difficult. both.
That's not an option. You have to choose one. Sorry.
Okay. City.
City. Patrick, water or beer?
Go with beer.
And for both of you, podcast or movie?
Big podcast fan.
Yeah, okay.
Movie.
Okay. And then for Patrick, Gollywood or German cinema?
German cinema.
Jesus is Lord. Okay. Yeah, that's it. Those are all the questions we had for you. Yeah. Thank you for taking part in the water cannon. I hope it was fun. And I still feel the need to explain what water ATM is, but I will not. Maybe I will just ask the listeners to go to the websites to Soul Bottles to Border, and I'm sure when the project is available or if it's there, they will definitely inform themselves on what an auto ATM is.
Yep. All right. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. Actually, my tummy is making that noise the whole time. What are you guys eating for breakfast in Accra and in Lusaka? I was thinking about this a lot in the past half hour.
Yeah, maybe I can start here. So for breakfast, usually people they usually buy it on the street. It's bwati. It's a red rice with beans, and you can have all kinds of salad on it if you like. Or and some people just they carry bottles with milk and. I don't even know the. I guess it's some kind of grains, and you just have it like as a liquid snack, to fill the tummy in the morning.
Rice and beans always. That's my favorite meal.
Nice. And in Lusaka, Amanda, what would you eat for breakfast? I don't know if you had already breakfast, but what would you eat?
Usually like toast. And this is usually like bread with tea. Sometimes there's Nshima with like eggs, for example. But yeah, I usually have like toast with jam or something like this. Yeah.
That sounds good. No.
You need some proteins. You should add some and see what there.
Eggs.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Next month in May, we'll talk about the Female Empowerment Menstrual Hygiene Day. We'll have a guest to talk about why it's important to use the day to raise the voice and why it's still a stigmatized topic. So I'm very looking forward to that. And I'm wishing you a wonderful day. I think the sun is also shining today in Hamburg, which is nice. And yeah, see you soon.
Thank you very much for having us.
Bye. Water is life, a human right. He cannot do without it. You and I, it's our responsibility. Create a better world.
Dieser Podcast wird produziert von Podstars bei OMR.